Tim, let's travel back in time to 1975. This was when organized crime in New England was headquartered in Providence. What were the forces that set the bonded vault heist in motion?
The mob boss at the time was a man named Raymond L.S. Patriarch. And as you said, he headquartered the headquarter for the New England mob. So Boston, you know, stretching all six New England states, was on Federal Hill in Providence at an old coin-o-matic shop up there. In our book, what we reveal is that the mob boss, Patriarca, was in federal prison for a time down in Atlanta, serving time for his role in a gangland slaying. And he felt that his soldiers, other wise guys and associates, weren't paying the dues that they should have been paying to the family. He okayed this heist of a secret mob bank in Providence on Cranston Street in Providence. It was buried in an old fur storage building. What we say is he and his close associates profited heavily from this heist. The mob boss okayed a heist from his own guys.
How did the heist go down and what was taken?
Eight daring men. I mean, let's think about this here. It was 150 safe deposit boxes. And we're not talking those small ones that you'd see at Citizens Bank, right? These were really large 2-foot safe deposit boxes stuffed with jewelry, gold bars, coin collections, cash, like you wouldn't believe. And they had one simple button as an alarm system, mainly for the furs, not even for the vault. And people might think, well, why wouldn't you have a more complex alarm system? Why would you need one? Who would rob from the mob? So the crew that was assembled by a faction that had ties to Patriarca, they were mainly from Massachusetts. The lead gunman was from Lowell, Massachusetts, and his partner, a guy named Charles Chucky Flynn, was also from Massachusetts. They're the ones that pulled it off that day. They were in the vault for all of 90 minutes, and they couldn't even make away. They didn't have enough storage in the vans and the cars that they had there to make away with all the loot there. People that we've interviewed that have seen it, including a woman who was a hostage in bonded vault at the time, said the stuff they left behind was knee-deep in valuables, so imagine what they took.
And what was the value of what was taken?
At the time, it was started out as, okay, they stole $1 million, and then they later upped it to $4 million, and that's what they went to trial with. But it was very hard to prove because no one wanted to go to the cops and say, hey, someone stole my ill-gotten gains. So so law enforcement at the time had a very difficult time estimating, so they went on the low end. They went with $4 million, which, by the way, at the time was massive heist. The Lufthansa heist was about that amount down in New York years later. What we come up with in the book after reviewing once sealed FBI files, interviewing former FBI agents, and interviewing several made members of La Cosa Nostra, is that our estimate is more at $32 million that was taken during that heist. And Ian, I'll tell you, I think we're lowballing that figure. It's very difficult. It's a moving target how much money was taken. I think that's a conservative estimate.
$32 million, is that in 1975 dollars or 2016 dollars?
Good question. 1975 dollars. I don't have the math in front of me, but that's more than $100 million if you were to do the calculation for today.
Now, you grew up hearing stories. Your father was the great investigative reporter, Jack White, who passed away in 2005. You grew up hearing stories about Bonded Vault from him. As you began working on this book project a few years ago with two co-authors, what were the primary questions in your mind?
The co-authors and I, Wayne Wister, they're both great journalists, and Randy Richard, I'm so lucky to have teamed up with them. I've learned a lot from them and forged great friendships. The main thing we wanted to know is what happened. I mean, the lead gunman, a guy named Robert Dussault, went into the witness protection program and vanished. For all we knew, he was living at large in some other part of the country. And we also wanted to know what was the long-term impact on organized crime as a result of this heist. Something to keep in mind, and what we touch on in the book, is that this did have huge ripple effects within La Cosa Nostra because, you know, they're all bad guys, right? But they are built on trust. The family is, you know, the family and built on trust. And this eroded that trust. Now, arguably, the RICO statute had a larger impact on organized crime than Bonded Vault did. But this was a seismic moment in organized crime. And we really wanted to paint that picture because, warts and all, this is an important part of not only Rhode Island, but New England history. Organized crime operated as a secondary government. I think people in Rhode Island, and one of the reasons I love reporting here, is they have steel trap memories, but we do forget just how powerful they were. They had cops, they had judges in their back pocket, and that's not hyperbole. They did.
What happened to the loot from the heist?
it disappeared. So much of the cash was put into the pockets of eight robbers who went into Bonded Vault. Several of those guys do what wise guys do when they come into a lot of money. They go to Las Vegas. One of them gambled almost all of it away, which is really saying something. And we talk about that in the book. But really, the valuable stuff, when that money ran out, and this is where the wheels started coming off, mainly the lead gunmen and some others, they wanted more of the loot that was supposed to get fenced, so liquidated into, so jewels liquidated into cash. And once that happened, they were supposed to get more of a cut. That never happened. And that's when you start to see some of the people decide to turn state's evidence because they never get the money. What we say is the money did make its way somewhere, and it made its way back into the organized crime family, and they profited heavily.
As you say, eventually suspects were charged in the case. It led to the longest and costliest trial in state history. Why was the trial so costly and so long?
Well, I think a lot of reasons. One is the judge of the trial and the lead prosecutor, the late Al DeRobbio, who eventually became a judge and headed up district court. They were put under 24-hour security, because at one moment there was a note left in the courtroom with their names and their family members' names written on it. And that's a very real threat at the time. You had state police at their property 24 hours a day. You had heavy security within the courtroom, which ended up being part of an appeal later on, saying it was unfair to have state troopers with essentially long rifles in there. It painted a bad image. You have that cost. But you had a lot of defendants. I mean, you had two of the eight gunmen who turned state's as evidence. That leaves six left over. Three of them were on the run for a long time, so it took a while to track them down. And then you had some other associates who were brought in. Just the sheer number of defendants took a while to go over it. And then the folks that testified again, the lead gunman eventually flipped, and that was a large part of the testimony.
The Bonded Vault heist was 40 years ago. La Cosa Nostra is a pale imitation of its former self. What is the relevance of the heist here in 2016?
It's a shell of itself. I think you're accurate in that. It certainly, La Cosa Nostra is nothing like it was 40 years ago. But saying that, doing the research on this book, Wayne, Randy, and I still found people did not want to talk to us about this. They were afraid. 40 years later, you know, with the names tied to it, a lot of them just, it was very difficult to get information out of them. So it has resonated for decades. But it's also an important part of Rhode Island history. You know, organized crime, whether we like it or not, was a major player in Rhode Island and has affected government and business here for a long, long time. And this was a big moment in that history.
You're a student not only of organized crime, but you're also an aficionado of movies based on organized crime. One of your favorite mob movies, Goodfellas, references the Lufthansa heist. Is there any possibility that we'll see the last good heist made into a movie?
Do you know anyone in Hollywood? Because I'd like their name. I always, look, I'd love that. I think it's a great story. As you said earlier in this interview, I grew up with this story. I like to joke, most kids get the story of Casey at bat. I got the story of Casey hit with the bat, and this was my favorite of all those stories. I felt it would make a great movie. My senior project when I went to UMass Amherst 20 years ago was I wrote a movie on this, and I got closer with Dad and talking to him about it by writing the movie. So the short answer is, I hope so, but we haven't had any nibbles yet.
WPRI-TV investigative reporter Tim White, thank you for sitting down with us.
Thanks, Ian.